OWC Radio, episode number 21, We're Legal, live from the MacTech Conference in Los Angeles, California. Hey everyone, Tim Robertson here, OWC Radio. Thanks for downloading this episode. Really appreciate it. This is a little different. You're probably going to hear, quite honestly, a lot of different audio quality. I don't want to say bad audio quality, but it's definitely going to be different than what you're used to on the show. Two reasons for that. Number one, right now as I record this portion of the show, I'm using what I consider and what I call my personal rig. It's an MXL, a Tempo microphone. It's not really small, but I call it my portable rig because it's always in my suitcase. It has a little tripod stand. It's USB, connects directly to my MacBook Pro, and it's not the greatest microphone. It's not the worst. It's average, and it's what I take when I got to do a show from the road like I am this week. The rest of this episode, however, it's going to sound totally different. The reason for that is I am using, let me pull it out over here so I can tell you exactly what it is. It's a Sennheiser E838 microphone. It's a good microphone. Beyond the microphone, I plug this into my iPhone with this weird wire contraption that I bought years ago. I don't remember from who at this point, to be honest. But it's kind of a neat wire contraption. It plugs into the XML port on the microphone. See, listen, snaps right in. It's a full-size microphone. It's heavy. On one end, on the other end of the microphone cord now, is two cables. One plugs into the headphone/microphone jack, if you will, on my iPhone. And on the other side of that is a headphone jack. So that means I plug this into my iPhone, and the iPhone recognizes a microphone, and I can record on the road. It's really cool. I like it a lot. But I don't have to unplug the microphone to check my audio recordings or anything like that, because it has a headphone jack in that cord as well. Now, how do I do that? I am using my iPhone, like I said, to record. But I'm using, and look, when you record audio, it takes a lot of space, or potentially takes a lot of space on your hard drive. I don't want to run out of space on my iPhone when I'm on the road. I sync my iPhone to my iMac at home, not to my laptop that's with me. So anything I put on my iPhone, I'm not really getting off until I get home. So to take care of that problem, so I can record on the road as much as I want and not take up any space at all on my iPhone, I use a program called Dropvox. Dropvox simply sees the microphone you have plugged in. There's a big red button, and you push the big red button, and you start recording. Now, it's recording in AIF or in MP3 format. You know what? I never looked to see if I could change it. I'm actually trying to go into the settings right now. Record in the background, record in higher quality. Yeah, I had that turned off. So that means that my recordings that I've done so far till right now, is it going to sound as good as in the future? Well, regardless, it records in MP3 format. It sounds okay. It's not the greatest, but it sounded okay. Here's why this app is really cool. So I hit record, I start recording, I push the button again to stop recording. When I stop recording, instead of saving it on the phone, it actually uploads it to my Dropbox. It's awesome. So now I don't have to sync my phone to any computer or anything like that. I don't have to share that file out through iOS. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to do AirPlay, nothing. All I have to do is hit stop recording because I've already set up Dropbox to share to my Dropbox. Dropbox, get it? So then I fire up Dropbox on a computer or on iOS, and there's the recording. And it does it very fast. Well, you know, as fast as whatever network you happen to be on. I guess if you're on in the Edge network, it's not going to be very fast. I got to plug my iPhone back in there and charge it up some more. So that's the portable rig that I'm using to record many of the conversations you're going to hear on this episode of OWC Radio. Now, I kind of do a secondary intro on this podcast because I wasn't sure how I was going to put it all together. And honestly, I forgot that I had my portable rig to hook up to the MacBook Pro. So I thought I was going to have to do everything on the iPhone. Turns out I didn't have to. So you're getting kind of two intros here, one with that I'm doing right now, and you're going to get one a little bit later with one of my conversations slash interviews that I do later in the show. And I literally was holding my iPhone and this portable microphone and talking to people, and I think it worked out really well. Where am I? Well, I'm at and you'll figure this out by listening to the rest of the show. I'm at the MacTech conference. It happened this year, beginning of November. It happened in Los Angeles, and as you know, if you've listened to the show, I'm based on the East Coast, so 3-hour time difference. It happened in Los Angeles. It's still happening right now. It's the last day. I fly out 6 a.m. tomorrow morning out of LAX back home with a brief stop in Chicago and then on to Detroit, where my wife should be waiting for me with a car, and then I get to drive home. So pretty much all of my Saturday is flying, driving, and then I get home. It's been a fantastic show. If you're a Mac professional, you're an Apple professional, this is really a show that if you've never gone to or even looked at, you might want to. I'm so impressed, to be honest with you, that I do believe OWC is going to continue to be a sponsor of this show moving forward. I can't wait to come here next year. It's just, it's a really well-run conference, and there's some fantastic people here. And you're going to hear some of those people because I sat down with a lot of people, well, a few people, and did some interviews. In fact, there's a couple more that I want to try to get out and go record when I get done recording this intro here. And I'm hoping to find them because, you know, people are coming and going quite often. I know I'm not going to get the interviews of everybody I want to, but I got some really good ones. I'm hoping to find Dave Hamilton if he's still here, and he might have left already, from Mac Observer. We've had him here on OWC Radio in the past, an early episode, but he's here, so I got to see Dave in person. I'd like to get him on the show. I've already recorded an interview, for instance, with Adam and Tanya Angst from Tidbits and the Take Control series of books. It's a great conversation, had a lot of fun. It's not long interviews because I'm literally capturing them in the hotel lobby. So again, the audio quality isn't going to be as pristine as I would like it to be, but it is live. It's, well, it's not live because it's a podcast, so obviously it's not live. But you know what I mean? When I say live, I'm in person recording these conversations. I don't get to do that a lot, you know. Usually when I do an interview with someone or a conversation with someone, it's via Skype. And even over Skype, it's just audio. I don't do video because they don't want to see me. I've got a great face for radio. So it's a lot of fun, and it's a lot of knowledgeable people. And the attendees are going to these conferences, and they're learning so much in these sessions. And it's been a really great time from what I can see and from the vibe I'm getting from people for just about everyone. Neil Tichton is the publisher of MacTech Magazine. He also runs these events, does a great job. And it's been a pleasure to work with Neil leading up to the event. And I've seen him running around making sure everything is seamless. If there's any problems, it's behind the scenes. The attendees don't have to deal with it or worry about it. And he's done an admirable job, I have to say. I'm really, really impressed with Neil. And we're going to get Neil here on OWC Radio. Not today. He's just way too busy. I don't want to bother him. But we are going to get him on OWC Radio here in the near future to talk about MacTech Magazine itself, the conferences, and the other things that they do throughout the year. Because it's not just this conference. It's not just the magazine. And I think a lot of you will find it very interesting, and you may learn something, heaven forbid, right? But this was a lot of fun. It's a totally different type of show. When I say show, I mean OWC Radio. It's kind of what I was hoping to do with the show from the very beginning, is to take it in different directions. It's not the same thing every single week. There's an over... I don't want to say it that way. There's a format that we pretty much stick to. But occasionally, we're going to change up things. Now, I know some of you really wasn't a fan of the gaming episode we did. I enjoyed it. I know some of you enjoyed it, but we probably won't do it to that extent again in the future. But this is a different type of episode. We're doing one-on-one conversations live in person with a recording mic where you're not going to get the audio fidelity that you're used to. I hope you can forgive that, knowing that the content is worth listening to, even if it doesn't sound as good. So that's my hope anyways. I can't wait to go back and listen to some of these myself because I don't remember every question I asked. I can't remember all the answers. So I'm looking forward to editing the show and then listening to it myself. This is a great event. You know, I talk about it later in the show. Got a tour of Disney Animation Studios. This was not Disney Animation Studios' the tourist event. This is actually the studio where people work, where the magic happens. I got to see the server farms underneath the whole thing, where all the horsepower, if you will, is located. Wow, the data that they push, it's just amazing. I got to go walk the lot and see some of these sound stages that were just gigantic, where they film stuff like Armageddon. I got to go into an actual screening room and watch a movie that it started today, but we got to see it early. It was Big Hero 6. Cool flick. I liked it. It's been an event that I think almost anybody would enjoy coming to, especially for those who want to increase their knowledge in technology. And, you know, I'm obviously a big believer in continuing education, especially in technology. You can't know what you know and that's it. There's no cap to it. You have to continuously learn more to stay on top of the trends, what's changing. What you knew 10 years ago doesn't necessarily mean it's bad information now, but things have changed progressively so that you're going to be out of date if you haven't continued that education. And more than that, though, if it's not what you do, you're just a Mac user or an Apple user, and you're not a professional in it, I still think you're going to enjoy this episode because it's people. And at the end of the day, I like talking to people. I like getting their stories. It's not all heavy tech, this episode. I talked to Tanya and Adam, for instance, about how they balance family life and running their business because they own their business. They work out of home. How's that balance work? So I hope you guys enjoy it. I had a whole lot of fun recording this episode. And again, you're going to get kind of these two different intros. I apologize for that, but I thought that was going to be the intro. When I found out that I could still do some on the Mac itself with this portable recording rig, I keep saying gig, I know. I kind of wanted to elaborate on it a little bit and kind of explain why the audio quality is so diverse in this episode. But in the meantime, I'm going to wrap up this segment. I'm actually going to grab my iPhone, my microphone. I'm going to go back downstairs. I'm on the fourth floor. The whole hotel is where I'm staying is also where the conference is, so it's very centrally located. It works great. I'm going to go down there and see if I can find some more interviewees. I think I've got three or four already. I'd like to get another two or three, make it a nice complete show. Obviously, I can't talk to everybody. I can't even talk to a lot of people. I can only talk to some people. But it's fun. It's fun talking to these people, learning what they do, how they got into it, where they're going with it. So I'm going to go out there and I'm going to see if I can talk to a few more people and wish me luck and keep listening and you'll find out if I have talked to more people or not. So in the meantime, make sure you're checking out MacSales.com. We're a little heavy on this episode with two of the interviews when it comes to RAID software and hardware. Listen to them because RAID is something that I don't know enough about personally. I mean, I know it in a general sense, but I'm learning a lot about RAID and soft RAID and really what you can do, some of the pitfalls from being at this event. I'm more educated than I was when I got here. I love that. It's so fantastic. Being an informed buyer really makes a big difference. So enjoy the episode. I will try to be back next week. Again, I've got a big problem next week that I'm going to New York for another show. And the week after that, I'm back in LA for yet another show. Now, MacTech is a show we actually had a booth and talked to people. The next 2 weeks are shops, which means I'm going to an event both weeks that we're not showing at. I'm just going to see if this is an event that we should do in the future. That's part of my job at OWC. But I will be in New York and I will be in LA the week after that. And I'm not quite sure when we're going to sit down and actually record an episode. I do have more interviews and conversations lined up, but if you would like to be on the show, I would love to have you on. All you have to do is send me an email, owcradio@maxales.com. Send me an email. Let me know you'd be willing to come on the show over Skype. We can have a nice conversation. I'd love to learn more about you, what you do. And I'm not looking for just Mac professionals. I'm looking for everyday people like me that just enjoy using their Mac. They've been using it for a long time, or maybe they're a brand new user. They just came over from the PC or the Linux world. I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to get you on the show and let other people hear you and know that they're not alone out there when it comes to this like and dislike of certain technologies, how they're using it. Maybe you're doing something unique other people don't know about, and they'd really benefit from learning about it by hearing you on the show. So drop me an email, owcradio@maxales.com, and that comes directly to me. And let me know. I need more guests on the show. Right now, we're kind of booked up into December, but I have some December dates open, and then into January and February, if you're willing to commit to coming on the show that far out, which sounds like a kind of far out, but it's already November, so it's really not. So thanks for listening to this episode. I really do appreciate it. It's going to end kind of abruptly during an interview. It was designed that way, but let me know what you think of this episode. Really am curious. owcradio@maxales.com. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. Every new episode that we release, I'm posting up on Twitter that it's live. It's at Max Sales. Oh, can you hear that? Someone's out in the hallway right outside my hotel room. I think it's the people cleaning the rooms. I don't know. But that's my cue to get out of here. See you hopefully early next week. We're not alone here in the booth. I've got another company with us, and somebody with that company is joining me on the show right at the beginning. Who are you? What's your name?
Mark James from SoftRade.
So, Mark, you're here at MacTech. Is this your first MacTech, or have you been here before?
This is my first MacTech conference.
So what do you? Now we're sharing a mic, so if you guys listening, if you're wondering why maybe my voice is fading out a little bit and we're not talking at the same time, I'm literally on a handheld mic and I'm sticking it in Mark's face here. Is this an event you think you're going to come to again? And would you recommend, if you're a Mac professional, a sysadmin that's dealing with Apple technology, is this something they should be looking at?
This is actually a great show for Mac professionals. The difference is that here are the people who have to go out there and actually consult with businesses to set up configurations, to find solutions for things. It's not a general purpose show like Macworld was. It's much more focused on how do you find the right technology or the right tools to get a job done, whether it's an IT installation or whether it's video editing equipment or whatever it happens to be.
So SoftRade, you got... And again, we're on a handheld mic, so if you guys hear any crackling, that's my fault, not the equipment. Mark, can you kind of give me a brief overview of the history of what the company is, what the software is, and where you guys are at now?
Okay.
And you can hold this mic so you don't have to feel...
Well, this is actually the 20th anniversary of SoftRade, the software. We started out originally bundling RAID with Apple's Workgroup servers back in 1994. So all educational servers and business servers that came out from Apple included, it was either called Apple RAID or SoftRAID, depending on the generation of the server. And when OS X came out, then Apple included their own free version of RAID, and we struck out on our own, and we've been selling SoftRAID ever since. The idea behind SoftRAID is to give you real-time backup, real-time redundancy on your system. So you have a MacBook or an iMac or a Mac Pro. You want to add a second disk to the disk running your OS or your data drive so that if either drive fails, you're still running. And the idea of data availability is very important because even if you have a backup, it may take you 6 or 8 or 12 hours to actually do a full restore and get the data usable again. So just like if you see a semi driving down the road, you notice how on each side of the truck there's two tires in each axle. That's how SoftRAID works. You've got two tires. If either tire gets a blowout, you can still drive to the truck stop and at your leisure replace the tire.
Let's talk about you for a minute.
What did you do before you started SoftRaid, and how did this company come in? How did you get into this to begin with?
This actually goes way back to the 80s. I started a company... 1980s. We started a company called Jasmine Technologies, which was the first mail order disk drive company for the Mac. It was hugely successful for a few years. And one of the employees at that company, Tim Standing, is actually the chief engineer of SoftRaid. So Tim and I have known each other since 1986. In the intervening years, I've worked for some Mac distributors. I've done different types of things. And I was hired by a company called Conley in 1995 to run the SoftRaid department. Conley was actually selling higher-end RAID solutions, doing some failover, selling products to companies like EMC and Hitachi as OEM. And ultimately, Conley got purchased by EMC. And I did not really want to go to EMC, so essentially bought the SoftRaid technology from EMC, and we started SoftRaid as an independent company. That was in 1998. And so we've been running it as a small partnership ever since.
Wow. That's awesome. So people are probably wondering, well, why are these SoftRaid guys in the OWC booth? What do they have to do with each other? You want to explain the partnership that we have here?
Sure. So SoftRaid gives you more leverage with disks. It's all about storage. It's all about redundancy. We do a lot of things to show users before a disk fails, what are the indicators that a disk is going to fail? We actually will stick up a dialog box telling you, here's a disk that is 30 times more likely to fail than normal. You should replace it before it goes. And so OWC recognized the synergy between a company selling a storage software product and the enclosures that they had back. It's been 7-8 years now, and it's just been informal. OWC has been a reseller. But when the Thunder Bay came out, we did a lot of testing with OWC. The new enclosure is fantastic, the Thunder Bay. It's very well built. It's not designed to be a commodity product. It's designed to be a enterprise-class hardware product, but at a consumer price. So it's a natural match for SoftRaid to sell with it, since it doesn't have a hardware RAID controller in it. It naturally needs RAID, because in four drives in a box, you need to have some redundancy. And so we've partnered up, and actually you can now buy the Thunder Bay bundled with SoftRaid, with drives, pre-configured, pre-certified, already set up with a RAID 5 configuration. So if you get a box with four drives in it that are, say, 4 terabyte drives, you get a 12 terabyte volume on your desktop, and if any one of those drives were to fail, your volume is still in your desktop, you're still working until you get a chance to replace the drive.
Hot swappable.
Yeah.
And you make a nickel every time we sell one, right? That's all? Just about a nickel?
Yeah, something like that.
No, of course not. You know, we're very proud of the OWC Thunder Bay 4, and it's even better with your software. So this is the first time we met yesterday. Yeah. I knew who you guys were, but I'd never met you guys. And I think it's a great partnership with OWC and SoftRaid, and working the booth with you guys has been great. So thank you for covering for me when I need to go take a bathroom break and stuff like that. And, you know, the level of expertise that you and Tim bring, when I say Tim, people think I'm talking about me, the other Tim, the SoftRaid Tim, the smart Tim. I'll just call him the smart Tim. I'll be the dumb Tim. When you and the smart Tim are here in the booth and I listen to you guys go into the technical details, it's impressive. I could tell you guys are both passionate for what you do, and you guys are experts in this field. Do you think that comes through education, or do you think that comes through you've just been doing it for so long?
Well, on my side, it's because I've been doing it for so long. On Tim's side, he's one of the top Mac OS driver engineers you'll ever meet.
Did he work for Apple?
No, we've never worked for Apple.
Really? I thought he did.
He did the original driver for us back in 1986 with Jasmine. He's done a lot of consulting. He's written Unix drivers. He's written Windows drivers. He's done file sharing drivers like for SAN. And for the past, you know, I don't know how many years it's been, almost 20 years, we've been doing SoftRaid together. And we've also written data recovery tools, so the expertise is there. And the thing that we try to do is that we don't come out with a lot of features in SoftRaid. The idea is that how do you make a enterprise-class consumer product? How do you make something that isn't going to cause a crash, isn't going to cause you data loss? How do you architect something that when things go wrong, and they inevitably will, you have the minimal chance of losing something. And so the whole concept behind SoftRaid is, how do we write a product that may not have the latest buzzword feature right away, but when a drive fails, when your system crashes, when your whole everything blows up in your face, what gives you the 99% chance that you'll actually still have your data? And that's really what we try to do.
You know, a lot of people, probably home consumer type of people, sit there and wonder, well, what do I need a RAID for? I've got my iTunes library and my photos. How does a RAID benefit me? What's the 10-second pitch, other than, you know, the two tires on the truck analogy? How do you sell that to a consumer? Because, let's be honest, and you said it yourself, the Thunder Bay 4 is, it looks like a consumer product, but it's really engineered to be, you know, at a higher level, but yet the pricing is consumer level. So a guy at home with a big iTunes library, all the family photos, why not just have some USB hard drive slapped on there, even though it's not that fast? And it backs up Time Machine. What does something like the Thunder Bay 4 with SoftRAID, what does that do for them over and above this Time Machine and a cheap hard drive?
That's a great question. And in one hand, it does nothing. On the other hand, it does a lot. So the thing you have to consider is what your objective is. So, and also the point behind SoftRAID is a little bit different than the point behind backup. The idea behind backup is to have an archive of what you did. The point about RAID is to have a real-time alternative so that if something goes wrong, you're still working. So if all you have is a music library, and if it goes down for a week while a drive fails and you had a backup and you copy it back to your system, it doesn't bother you because you have all your music, everything is fine. But if you're running a small business or you need something where you can't afford to have downtime, then you need to start considering alternatives. To give you an extreme example, we used to develop RAID systems for Wall Street. And in Wall Street, there used to be a three-pager system. I'm sure they have something different now, where the first pager went to the engineer, the second went to the VP, the third went to the top VP in the organization. You have 5 seconds of downtime on Wall Street, your ass is grass. Sorry if I can say that. So you start to pay a price the more data availability you need to have. So if your goal is to simply have something simple that you don't have to pay a lot of attention to, but if there's a fire, you know, like one example that's very useful with something like SoftRAID is you take your MacBook, say, you attach a drive to it, you mirror it, and then you put it off in a safe deposit box or a friend's house so it's off-site. Your house burns down, you have a copy of your system, you can literally walk into an Apple store and synchronize your drive to the new Mac and be running with your old environment in an hour and a half. That's the importance of RAID versus backup. I hope that is clear enough.
Absolutely. So enterprise solutions at a consumer level price, that's really the goal, and that's what we've accomplished with the OWC Thunder Bay 4 combined with SoftRAID. It's a fantastic solution. Make sure you go to our website, check it out. I'm going to try to interview as many people as I can here throughout the day. That's why this episode came out a little bit later than usual. And plus, I'm on the hotel Wi-Fi, which isn't always the fastest. Although I have to say, I uploaded this morning, Mark, and I could not believe how fast the upload was. It was better than my cable connection at home, and it was Wi-Fi. I was like, wow, I'm kind of impressed. So, yeah, I'm going to go find some more people to talk to, and we'll be right back here on OWC Radio 2.0. Now, OWC is not the only vendor, obviously, here at the MacTech Conference. Another one is Telestream. They've actually got the booth right next door. If I post pictures, you'll see the Telestream booth as well. They make ScreenFlow. What is ScreenFlow? Well, let's talk to Christine. She's with Telestream. What do you do at Telestream first?
Well, I am actually the product manager for ScreenFlow, and we just released a new version on Monday, and that's ScreenFlow 5, and we added a lot of new features, including the ability to record your iOS device right from your computer into ScreenFlow.
Wow, really? That's pretty cool. It's probably doing really poorly on the Mac App Store, I imagine.
Yeah, I'm pretty bummed because we were number 5 yesterday, and it's really a pity because today we're number 6.
Oh, that's awesome. That's fantastic. So how long has Telestream been doing this? I mean, personally, I know the answer to this because I've used Telestream's products in the past. I've done product reviews of ScreenFlow, but how long have you guys been in business? How long have you been there?
Well, I have been with the company for about just over 6 years, and the company itself has been around for 15, 16, gosh, maybe 17 years now. I don't remember off the top of my head. And ScreenFlow came to us by way of an engineering team that were in Europe that we acquired in 2008. And the original creator of ScreenFlow is now our head of engineering.
You've been doing this then long enough to see the change that the Mac App Store has brought to the platform. How big of a change is it for a software company?
Well, they obviously have their own requirements, so it's some extra work for us. But people are passionate about Apple, and a lot of people want to get their products on the Mac App Store, and it's been a really successful thing for us, so it's worth the effort for sure.
How'd you get into technology? What led you to this job?
Well, I worked for Apple Computer a very, very long time ago.
Is that a company around here?
And so I was with them, and I had some contacts there, and I've just kind of always been in technology. My family, my dad's an engineer, and so it's just a familiar place.
Is he still an engineer, or was he an engineer?
He was, yeah. He's retired. He was at Slack, if you know it's Stanford Linear Accelerator Center, so yeah.
So he kind of got you into technology. He brought it home from work and got you excited about it?
That's right, and yes, exactly that.
So I know you have siblings. Are they into technology as well?
Not like I am, but a Mac fan for sure. Runs in the family.
Kids?
Yes, kids too.
Do you? How do you get them excited about technology, or do you even have to nowadays?
You don't have to. I mean, when I was younger, it was different, but now kids just gravitate towards it and they just pick it up and love it.
So people listening to this, they want to learn more about this. Where should they go?
If they want to learn about ScreenFlow, which is a screencasting and video editing tool, they can go to our website, which is telestream.net, and then /ScreenFlow. And it's a very powerful tool, lets you create really beautiful videos for training, tutorials, education. I mean, it has an application in almost any industry these days. And yeah, it's $99.
So if you're driving in your car and you didn't get a chance to write that URL down on the dust on your dash, just go to the show notes for episode number 21. We'll have a link right there to Telestream's website and to ScreenFlow, and check it out. Thank you, Christine.
Thanks.
So various times over the years, I've interviewed both Adam Angst and Tanya Angst. I'm going to call you guys Apple dignitaries. You guys have been publishing tidbits for a very long time. You guys were an inspiration for me when I started my own publication 20 years ago at this point. But I've never actually interviewed you both at the same time. And there's things I wanted to ask you guys since we're at the MacTech conference. I thought this would be a perfect opportunity. I'm going to start with you, Tanya. How do you guys both run Tidbits, Take Control. How do you separate your work life from your home life when you guys work together? How does that work?
Hi, and thanks for having me on the show. We have the toothbrush rule. The toothbrush rule is just that when it gets to the point at night where we're brushing our teeth, even if we have a great idea or a really important point to make, we don't talk about it. Once we're brushing teeth, it's personal only.
But that still leaves a lot of time during the day between when you wake up, unless the toothbrush rule is in the morning, because I don't think that wouldn't work, would it?
Well, you make a good point. There is a lot of time in the day. We really like working together. I consider it, you know, sort of a tree or a wonderful thing that I get to stay home, not have a day job, and Adam gets to stay home too. We do have offices in different corners of the house, so we're not, you know, constantly in each other's way, and that, I think, is necessary for sanity.
So, Adam, was she into tech before you met her, or is that your fault?
She didn't do quite the same tech, but her father had worked at NCR, and so she had had an NCR DecisionMate 5, I believe, in high school when I was working on first a Franklin Ace 1000 Apple II clone and then an Atari 1040 ST, which were my pre-Mac computers. So we had slightly different technology backgrounds, but once the Macintosh became the thing, that's where we coalesced on that one.
So you've been publishing Tidbits for 26 years now? Is it 20?
It'll be 25 years in April. So
how do you keep your enthusiasm? Because this is not the same Apple. This is not the same Mac that we were writing about back in the late 80s, 90s. How do you keep your enthusiasm and come to events like this and still have, I've seen you, you're still passionate about this. How do you keep that?
That's a really interesting question, and In some ways, we don't. We don't have the same enthusiasm we did 15 years ago or 20 years ago when it was all new. It was all fabulous. You were discovering things that people just didn't know and sharing it with people who were making things, creating stuff, doing jobs that were not possible without this information. Now, when you feel like you're putting, you know, an hour into figuring out whether or not the little keep link shows up in messages when you do an audio soundbite and how you do that on iOS and Mac, it just doesn't have the same visceral satisfaction. That said, I think also the world has changed such that Apple is no longer the beleaguered Apple computer. They are now the dominant technology company in the world. And honestly, as a member of the media, I frankly think it's our job to be a little bit of the loyal opposition, to say, you know, point out truth where truth is. They do a lot of things very, very well, and they should be praised for that. But Apple also does a lot of things not so well, and that should be pointed out. People, people should not believe the marketing machine, because Apple is one hell of a marketing machine. Some things they do are simply not good. And I think it's partly our job to be making that information available to the user.
Tanya, how much self-education do you have to do to stay on top? I mean, you guys are Take Control books, tidbits. You produce a lot of content on a yearly basis. How much self-education do you have to go through to stay on top of the changes? I mean, not just Mac, but iPhone, iPad, iOS. I mean, there's a lot involved.
It's always self-education, and that's a huge challenge, is as soon as you learn one operating system, the next one rolls out, and there's no end to it. Fortunately, as editor-in-chief of the Take Control series, self-education is very easy. I think of a topic I'd like to know more about. I get an author to write an entire book about it, and then I edit the book. So that's a wonderful way to get educated.
What has the electronic publishing done for you guys? Because, I mean, you guys were honestly one of the first companies to really jump in with both feet with the Take Control series. I've read a lot of the books. In fact, Take Control of Yosemite just came out this week, or last week, wasn't it? Was it this week? Yeah, this week. Last week. Okay. How's that been, that transition?
The transition to Yosemite has been really challenging.
To electronic books.
Right, the transition. Well, you know, we always have been so on the internet. Adam and I both were at Cornell in the mid-80s. Cornell was all about the Mac and all about the internet. So we've just always been really intrigued with digital publishing and saving paper and what you can do on the screen. So for us, it was more of a relief, I think, that we finally figured out how we could create books and sell them ourselves on the internet.
Adam, you and Tanya ran the game show last night. Unfortunately, I didn't get to watch it. I was so beat from the trip to Disney the night before. But how do you prepare for something like that, running a game show in front of hundreds of people and keeping it entertaining? I mean, what training do you go through? What preparation? And it was you and Tanya and Adam, or Andy Minako.
Well, you know, I mean, you have to start months in advance, or at least days, because maybe hours sometimes. But what I've found is that when you've done this for as long as we have, and keep in mind, you know, we've been doing Tidbits for 25 years, but we were working on Macs for 5 years before that at Cornell. So we've been really working on Macs since 1985, 86. And because of what we do with Tidbits and with books, there's just a vast amount of information in our heads. Most of it's useless now, of course. Completely and utterly useless. But that makes great trivia questions. And so that was just a whole lot of fun to be able to pull out these weird little facts that are somehow in my head and turn them into questions. Because there's other people out there who have that in their heads, too. And they're like, ooh, I know, I know.
I'll give you an example of that. I had a client about 2 years ago who called me up. He wanted help. I went over there. It was a Mac Plus running Mac OS 7.1, and all the icons were generic. So I thought, oh, well, it just needs to have the desktop rebuilt. Right. Under 7.1. Tanya, what is the key combination to rebuild your desktop under 7.1? I had no idea, by the way. I had to...
I think the command key might be involved, but I just can't remember.
Yeah. Do you remember?
Hold down command option and reboot? Hold and reboot. Yep.
I had to use my iPhone. And it dawned on me at that moment, the phone, which was a 3GS at the time, was like 10 times more powerful than that Mac Plus. But it's muscle memory that you knew back in the day because you used it all the time. But you throw that away over time. So last question, compelling reasons that people that are listening to this might want to come to the MacTech conference in the future, and your thoughts of the passing of Macworld Expo. We'll start with Adam.
What I find fascinating about MacTech and some of the other small conferences that are going on is that it's finally putting the lie to, oh, the internet is enough, that you can just be on Twitter and it's just as good as being in person. It's not. That we've come here, we've actually had four or five individual meetings that were absolutely necessary and couldn't have been done. One, I had a meeting with Dave Hamilton at Mac Observer. Last year, I'd said, oh, Dave, we should talk. We didn't talk for the entire year until we come here. It's like, Dave, we really need to talk. And we sat down here and talked. And so that's the kind of thing that really happens at one of these conferences. And it isn't just people you know. It's people you run into. You're sitting up with a dinner. You start talking to them, and you discover they're doing something exactly like you are, and it becomes tremendously valuable. As far as Macworld Expo passing, it's sad, but just because of the history, but the writing has been on the wall there from the internet, really more so than people will talk about, oh, Apple computer pulled out and everything back in 2009 or something. But the fact is that what Macworld Expo provided was small bits of information that were really better accessed via the internet.
And Macworld Expo really was a community. Is that community spirit getting together something you're going to miss, Tanya?
Well, there's no question I'm going to miss Macworld Expo. You know, a week in downtown San Francisco with childcare provided back home, awesome restaurant meals. But seriously, I think the piece of Macworld Expo that we're going to see in a lot of smaller and more regional conferences is what was great about Macworld Expo every year was getting together with the other people and just weaving that social network in a way that you can only weave it in person, much more deeper and more meaningful than online social networking, even though online social networking is very cool and important too. So I think we're just going to see a lot more smaller conferences because people don't need to do trade shows in the same way that they did before necessarily, where they see products or look at feature lists and things, because we can do all that on the internet really effectively. What we can't do is what the three of us on this podcast episode are doing right now. Is we got two people sitting on a couch, one person on the coffee table, we're in a pleasant hotel lobby, and we're just having a really meaningful conversation, and we can see each other's faces and all that. And I think people really don't want that to go away, and MacTech is one of a bunch of conferences where you can get together with people and have that happen.
So, you know, I didn't want to spill the beans. I know that Adam and Dave Hamilton were talking about the merger between Tidbits and Mac Observer to turn around and buy Microsoft and take it into a new direction. I didn't want to give it away, but it's such big news I had to.
Well, you know, We were trying to keep it quiet until the close of market. You know, we didn't want to affect the stock prices because we know that Apple and Google are going to just tank now that they, you know, Microsoft will actually have some real leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. If Tidbits isn't bookmarked in your browser, it really should be. It should be a daily visit. It's got such great content. New ebook from Take Control of Yosemite. Great book, I know for a fact, because the publication I actually own just reviewed it and got perfect marks. So congratulations on 25 years of publishing. Thanks for being on OWC Radio.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
So somebody that I've never met before, and I got to see quite a bit here at the MacTech conference, his name is Charles Edge. He's with Jamp Software. Now, if you don't know what Jamp Software is, Google it. I'm not going to explain it to you, so. but I will ask Charles here, what do you do at Jamf Software, and a brief overview of what Jamf is?
So Jamf is a device management company. We manage devices at scale. So we can send scripts, manage the state of devices, send installation packages, and do mobile device management. And specifically at Jamf, I am the product manager of a new product that we're building at Jamf called Bushel. And Bushel is trying to take all these enterprise technologies like mobile device management and build them in such a way that they're very easy to use for small, medium-sized businesses.
So now we got the official part of what you do and the company you work for and the PR over with. Let's talk about you for a minute. Charles, what was your first job in technology?
My first official job in technology was I was building POS systems when I was in high school. And then after high school, I went to work for the University of Georgia, and I did a lot of the old school technologies like VAX type stuff of mainframe management and lab management and things of that nature.
Why technology? What brought you to, hey, look at that keyboard, I want to start typing on it, I want to mess with that monitor? I mean, there had to have been something that kind of pushed you in that direction. Was it your parents? Was it a friend? Or was it just... it just kind of came naturally.
So my dad's a graphic designer. That had something to do with it. But I would say one of the larger elements was I suck at everything else I do. I'm decent with computers, not great, but everything else I just truly suck at. So,
did you study for it, or is it just it's kind of learn as you go and continuing education by simply doing?
So I did study management information systems at the University of Georgia, but... most of what I know, especially in the Mac space, really came from just being in the field doing it day after day. In school, you learn a lot of programming techniques and things like that, which have come in handy since I've been doing a lot more coding at Jamf. But before, with systems administration and network administration and things like that, it was definitely a lot more just on-the-job learning.
So I don't know how old you are. I'm going to assume you're kind of around my age. Late 30s, early 40s, mid 40s, somewhere around there. Yeah, he's nodding his head. So your dad, as a graphic designer, started with pen and paper, and is he still a graphic designer or is he retired?
I would say he still does some web design, some graphics, stuff like that. Yeah.
So your dad was the generation that learned the hard way, maybe the proper way. I don't know how you'd say that, but. Pen and paper, rulers, all that, and he transitioned to computers. Do you remember that transition growing up, seeing him get into computers and he had to learn this stuff for his job?
I don't know if he had to, but I remember they started with, I believe it was a Performa. By then, I had actually been at school using like a Mac SE and a couple of other. I took programming in high school with the Apple IIc and doing Pascal and stuff like that, but... seeing the impact that stuff had with the other industries definitely spurred me to kind of get into it.
Last question. This is the important one. You have to delete everything off your iPhone, other than the Apple apps, of course, except for 5 apps. Yeah, he's pulling out his iPhone. He's like, oh, crap, which ones am I going to pick? What are those 5 apps that's going to stay on the iPhone because everything else has to disappear? What are those apps?
Audible. Because I listen to a lot of books on tape. Mint, because I need to be able to track my money, whatever small amount of money I have. These days, the Fuel Band app, but that'll end up probably being replaced completely with health when I switch to an Apple Watch.
Are you interested in the Apple Watch? Is that something that's on your radar?
I've owned every wearable on the market, pretty much. Right now, I'm at the tail end of a Nike Fuel Band just because... when it comes to gamification and badges, I'm a bit of a it's a whole thing that was designed for me almost. I can't help but use one of those. So for example, with my Fuel Band, I'm only using it because there's a 365-day badge that I got yesterday that I really wanted. So I'll probably trade that out for like an Up 3 or something until the Apple Watch comes out. But I'm absolutely going to be a super early adopter of an Apple Watch.
I got to ask, how far is Malibu from here?
About 8 miles.
Yeah. Yesterday morning, 6 a.m., I'm out in front of the hotel, and this guy comes running up, and he ran from Malibu. I couldn't get to the end of the block, I have to be honest. Okay, so you got a couple more apps. What are the last two?
I would say the Twitter app, because that's how I keep in touch with most of my friends in the app.
Well, you got to shoot out your Twitter handle so the people listening can find you.
Oh, at CEDGE 318. Okay. And then probably the Netflix app, because you get bored at times and you need it.
Charles, thanks very much for being on OWC Radio. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been awesome.
So I hope you guys have enjoyed all the conversations I've had with a variety of people. Again, it wasn't as many as I was hoping, but we are kind of limited on time. I don't want to make a 4-hour podcast. And I think what we've got so far is, not looking at all the time frames on all the segments. I think it's probably getting close to an hour. But I had one more I wanted to do. But this will be the last segment of this episode of OWC Radio 2.0. Again, make sure you guys tune in next week, and I would love to have feedback from you. It's owcradio@maxsales.com. And remember, I'm doing the social media, so hit me up on Twitter. It's @maxsales, and we are on Facebook as well. So it's been a long week here at the Mac Tech Conference. A week, it's been like 3 days. But I've had a really good time. It's, like I said earlier to start the show, I didn't know much about this conference before I came, but it was educational, and it was a well-done show. But this is the last night. I actually fly out about 9 hours from now, so at some point I should probably go to sleep. But I do have another Tim with me. He is he's somebody that was in the booth. We came to Mac, I almost said Macworld. See what I did there? He came here specifically with OWC to talk about SoftRaid. I'll be honest with you, I knew about SoftRaid, but I didn't know a lot about it. I was ignorant. And I sat in his presentation today, and I learned a lot more, and I'm very impressed. And I almost don't want to use USB drive right now for some of the stuff that I've been using them for after hearing you talk. I was like, oh, I need to move over to a RAID and a Thunderbolt drive. So he has the coolest name in the world. What is your name?
Tim Standing.
Tim.
Like standing, like you're standing up.
I was just talking about the Tim part.
Oh, that.
The coolest name. How long have you been doing software, Tim?
I've been doing SoftRaid. I actually got hired as a consultant in 97 to fix a bug that the original architect couldn't fix.
Wow.
And I fixed it in about 4 months, and then they had me do some work to try and land an Apple contract. And a year later, I got a call from Mark James. And Mark was actually the guy who hired me out of graduate school in 86. And he said, hey, I've got this opportunity. We can get the SoftRaid code from EMC, who just bought the company that owns SoftRaid, and we can start a company. And that's what we did in 98. We started SoftRaid.
I had Mark earlier on another segment of this episode. You guys, I can see why you work well together, but you guys really are different, And I think it's that difference that really helps build a team and be. You can't have someone else that's just like you.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Mark is very able to deal with customers and deal with an incredible amount of information and walk people through all the problems they're having. And I'm a real details guy.
And I've got that impression listening to you talk that you are. The attention to detail is very important to you.
Yeah, it is. My background is I started as a biochemist and as an experimental person, and I brought that whole attitude towards software engineering. So people will tell me, oh, you can't do something, or, this is working perfectly, and I'll sit down and design a test and figure out, A, it's not working perfectly, or in the case of RAID 5, which we're doing with SoftRaid, everyone said you can't do RAID 5 on SoftRaid, and I said, damn it, I'm going to try. I'm going to make some tests and see if it's possible.
And it was possible.
And we're doing it. Yeah. We're doing 500 megabytes a second on 4 drives. So
let's go a lot farther back with you, if you don't mind. How did you get into software development? What was the lure for you? Because after talking to you and getting to know you for the last few days, you were a fireman, a biochemist, you said. Mm-hmm. Now SoftRaid. Where's that progression? How does that happen?
Well, when I was a kid, I was always taking things apart, like cars and bicycles and motorcycles. And when I graduated from college, I wanted to, I had been exposed to a field called protein crystallography, which is where you actually look at a protein molecule and you see where all the atoms are in 3 dimensions. And I've always worked really well in 3 dimensions. And I got really poor in graduate school. And I wrote a couple articles, being an academic, I wrote a couple articles in them, and actually in MacTech, on how to build a hard drive. And Mark saw one of those articles and said, hey, you should come work part-time for us. So for a year, I worked part-time for his company, Jasmine, at the time. And I really got into computers. I was really... So my only education with computers has been night school.
So, I mean, the lack of education, really, in software development wasn't that much of a hindrance to you. I'm getting the impression you kind of taught yourself. That attention to detail, that work ethic, led you to where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the testing. The fact that you have an idea and you test it. You know, when we did Softrate 4, we tested the living daylights out of it. When we did Softrate 5, which we just released, we tested the living daylights out of it.
You tested that for, what, 9 months before you actually released it?
Yeah, we tested for... I got to the point... My goal was, like, zero important bugs before we shipped, and we got there.
Nobody does that.
Well, we're different.
And it shows. Let me ask you, if it wasn't Softrate, but it's software... What do you think you'd be creating?
Well, I always wanted to do three-dimensional imaging software, and I just sort of fell into storage back when I wrote this driver for doing stuff on a Mac Plus, for doing a SCSI drive on a Mac Plus. And a friend of mine, who I actually managed later, went off to work for Apple, said, once you start doing storage, you never stop, because nobody will ever let you do anything else because it's too hard. And nobody else wants to do it. And he's been pretty much right. You know, I started consulting after I left Jasmine, and I did a file server for a while. I did a fiber channel driver that Avid shipped thousands of for Mac OS 9. And then I started working on Softrate, and I've been doing storage stuff ever since.
What do you think the biggest change in storage has been? Not just the biggest, but the most significant storage. Leaving out SSD, because that's the obvious answer, what's the biggest change in storage?
In the last 3 years is Thunderbolt, because Thunderbolt is reliable. And it's, you know, when you do a when you pull a cable on a disk drive, which is what you end up doing when you forget to turn off something and you unplug the cable, the Thunderbolt is so much more reliable than either FireWire or USB.
Why? What makes it more reliable?
Because Apple decided it was really important to make it reliable.
And Intel. I mean, Intel. A joint... They called it something else to begin with. I forget now. Do you remember the...
What's that? Lightning or something? Or Light Peak or something?
Light Peak. Yeah, I think that's it. I remember the initial demos that I saw online. The transfer speed seemed phenomenal. But I didn't realize it's more than just super fast transfer speed. Right. It's this reliability.
It's also really low latency. I mean, you can think of Thunderbolt.
Can you explain what low latency means to some of the people? I know what you mean, and a lot of people listening, but there's others that are like, it sounds like that's important, but I don't really understand what that means.
So low latency means that when you ask the disk drive for a piece of data, the disk drive turns around and sends it back really quickly. So a counterexample, for instance, if you have internet over satellite, you can have really fast download speed, but your internet experience can be really awful because your signal has to go up the satellite and back down, and then the data comes back the other direction, and it's going 40,000 miles, you know, or some huge number of miles. So your performance suffers because the amount of time it takes the transfer to start. So latency is the amount of time you're waiting for the first bit of data to come. And it's actually the reason that SSDs are so fast. People think that SSDs are really fast because they'll do 300 megabytes a second. The user experience for SSDs is they're really fast because the first bit of data doesn't come through in 5 milliseconds. It comes through in 5 microseconds. Wow. It's 1,000 times faster.
That's kind of... no spoilers here, but a little inside baseball for the listeners. Mark's attended quite a few of the talks, I guess, here, and he gave his own. He wasn't at the booth as much as Mark was. I said Mark, didn't I?
No,
sorry,
yeah.
Tim. Tim has been at a lot of the sessions and stuff. Mark and I worked the booth a lot more. I actually got cut pretty bad, almost to the point where I needed stitches. There was a lot of blood.
It reminded me when I was an EMT. I didn't want to say it, but I thought... you know, that's a lot less blood than I've seen a lot of times. So
I'm bleeding for the company, Tim. I keep wanting to say Mark. I don't know why. It's because I'm tired. But Tim and I feel like I'm talking about myself. I think that's what it is. It just seems weird.
You can just call me Standing, you know?
Standing. We went and saw Interstellar tonight. 2 hours, 50 minutes, I think it was. An amazing, the Arc Light Theater?
Yeah, the Arc Light Theater in Manhattan Beach.
What was your impression of the movie? Without giving spoilers, because this movie just came out. A lot of people listening to it saw the preview. It's got a lot of buzz. Do you recommend it?
Yeah, I think it's going to get an Academy Award.
Do you really? What do you think the Academy Award? I don't think it's going to be in acting. I don't think Matthew McConaughey did that great of a job acting. He was still Matthew McConaughey, and I was still waiting for a hey or something, you know, his little catchphrase. But what do you think it's going to get an Academy Award in?
Best Picture.
You really think so? You think that was the best picture, or do you think that's the best picture that's going to have that much buzz?
I think both.
Really? I don't know. I can see it happening, and I wouldn't be surprised, but I liked the movie. It was phenomenal.
It was a really original story. It was a really original take on, you know, science fiction, you know.
It was in the movies. It wasn't, the story itself wasn't wholly original. I've read other things very similar that actually did a better job, but it's in book format, and you've got a lot more time to explain the philosophy. There was parts of it where I liked how fast they move, where you went from, he's here, and now he's here, and we're not going to explain the technology. We're not going to tell you how long he was training to do something. He's just, it's there, yeah. Because the story demanded it.
The thing that was so wonderful about it is it didn't get lost in the technology. It was a really human story, and that was what was so amazing about it.
Anybody watching the previews for this movie sees all these dust storms and that the Earth is dying and it can't support life, and that's the whole impetus of the movie. I'm not giving anything away. That's it right in the ads. But I actually leaned over to Tim at a certain point, and I said, there's so much dust and dirt in this movie, I feel like I need to take a shower.
You also leant over and said, stop jumping.
Every time something would happen, Tim here would, I swear to God, there was one point something really spectacular happens, and he gave Michael Jordan a run for his money in vertical jump. It made me jump. He jumped so high, but it was a good time. Thanks for going to the movie. That was great.
Yeah, it was a great end to a really wonderful week.
Yeah. So you did have a great time here at MacTech?
Yeah, I come here. You know, I used to go to WWDC. I've gone for every year from 96 through 2012, I think. And I haven't gone the last 2 years. And I started going to MacTech, and I found the type of people here were, you know, a lot more experienced, and the talks were much broader than what I was used to.
And the crowd's a lot smaller here than at WWDC.
It's only 400 people, but it's 400 of the best people that you're going to find. I went to a talk yesterday on using Amazon Web Services. I never would have seen that at WWDC. And it's something that I won't use in the next year, but I'll probably use it 2 years from now, and it'll probably affect what types of products and businesses I want to do 2 years from now.
Any big changes coming to SoftRaid before we wrap up here that you can reveal? Or, I mean, when we were in the talk, when I was listening to you, someone had a suggestion, and you've even said, you know, a lot of the features come up because of user feedback.
Yeah.
I got to assume then user feedback is very important, but is there anything that you got today that you're like, I have to incorporate that in the next version or the next point release or anything like that?
Well, the suggestion that came up in my session was I was talking about how long people should use disk drives for, and I said, you know, usually really 5,000 hours for a laptop drive, and about 10,000 hours is the longest you want to use a desktop drive for. This is all information that's reported in SoftRaid, and the user said, you know, there's a whole email notification system in SoftRaid which warns you about errors, and the customer said, you know, you should be warning people when their drive gets to 10,000 hours, and I thought, that is a no-brainer, so it's going to go into the next point release.
Is the discrepancy between desktop and laptop because one's a 2.5 and one's a 3.5, or is it because the laptop is being moved around much more, thus it's more prone to errors?
I don't know. All I know is that, you know, it goes back to my empirical basis, which is I almost never seen a 2.5-inch drive that's got 5,000 hours on it.
Really? I that's new to me. And
that's probably what, 2.5 years or so?
It's 2.5 years of using it all the time, like 8 hours a day. People don't use laptops for 8 hours a day. You know, these measurements are not true for SSDs, which really can, you know, if they're on and nothing's happening, there's really no wear going on. But with rotating disks, if they're on and they're spinning, there's wear going on. I think the mechanism and the motors and all the parts in a 2.5-inch drive are just so much smaller and more fragile. People drop laptops, they sit on them, they get run over by cars, they get stolen. Desktops don't have that much abuse. And so people, the desktops seem to last longer.
Last question, is there any... I know that there's only a finite amount of data you can read and write from an SSD, but has anybody really transferred that into hours like they have with more traditional hard drives? Is there a ticking time bomb? Obviously, there is a ticking time bomb on every hard drive, but has anybody, because SSDs are still so new, does that exist for SSDs yet?
I know that Enantech.com has done at least one test where they've written a drive to death. SSD, yeah, an SSD to death. And I think they've done it with a latest Samsung drive, I'm not sure. But there's, you know, with SSDs, you can read them forever. Nothing's really going to wear out when you read them. It's writes that really kill them. So for things like, I'm really in favor of them for servers, especially servers that sit on the internet and serve web pages. There's not...
That's reading, it's not writing to it.
It's all reading, and it's... or a file server that you're using for a repository for images or video, it's all reading, and there's no moving parts, and it's just like, you know, the only moving part in my Mac Mini server back at Software offices is the fan. You know, so it's just rock solid. I never worked.
I was surprised, I know I said that was going to be the last question, but I was surprised when someone asked you about the Fusion drives, and because it seemed like an interesting technology combining an SSD and a conventional hard drive, so you can get the benefits of an SSD in speed, but yet you still get the storage. And when they asked you, I think someone's playing football or something over there. I keep hearing a whistle and laughter, which the mic probably isn't picking up, so people think I'm crazy. No, we're outside the hotel in the back, and it's almost 10 o'clock. So I was surprised to hear what your opinion is on the Fusion drives. And if you don't mind, I'd love you to share that here on OWC Radio.
Well, the problem I see with Fusion drives is they have all the problems that a RAID 0, otherwise known as a Stripe, has. A Stripe is where you split the data between two disk drives, two or more disk drives. There's, you know, say you have two disk drives, half the data is on one and half the data is on the other, and it's in little blocks. So when you do a large enough read, you actually read from both disk drives. It's really fast. But the problem is, if any one disk drive goes down in a Stripe, you lose everything. Because in the case of a two-drive Stripe, you've lost half your data. And there's no redundancy, there's no way to get it back. Fusion drives are exactly the same. You have two devices. If either one of those devices goes down, you lose absolutely everything. And I really think that it's definitely faster. If I was going to take the same piece of hardware, like an SSD and a rotating disk, I would put the stuff that needed to be really fast on the SSD, like the operating system and the files, you know, the applications, and maybe scratch disks if you're using Photoshop, and I put all the long-term storage on your rotating disk. And I think that actually is a much better solution than Fusion.
I always thought Fusion Drive was kind of a intermediate technology to begin with. It was a way for some people to get the feel of SSD without the high cost, at least when Fusion drives first came out, the benefits of SSD, but yet still have the storage space, and not without a huge cost. But I always felt it's a transitionary technology. Why invest anything significantly into it?
I think you're right. I mean, if you look at what people have been playing around with for several years, this concept of doing hybrid drives, which are rotating drives with SSD technology with flash on them, or I think Intel has a motherboard which actually has flash embedded, and it actually, you know, mirrors the first 10 gigs of the drive or the first 16 gigs of the drive. They're both sort of stopgap solutions, and I really don't think they're the right way of tackling the problem.
Tim, thanks a lot for helping me wrap up this episode of OWC Radio.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.